So Matt is going to give us a talk about invisible matter. Matt is a graduate student at Stanford University and one of the founding members of the new ASA chapter in the Bay Area.
All right. Thank you for having me. As Kirk said, I'm Matt from Stanford. My general research interest is sort of on the intersection of cosmology and particle physics. So I'm a future particle physicist by trade, but I'm more interested in cosmological questions. So as a particle physicist, we use big machines like this. This is a 2-mile-long particle accelerator just south of Stanford to explain stuff like this, which I think is pretty interesting. And I work on an experiment called the heavy photon search. It's done at a different facility, but we'll get into the idea of a heavy photon, which is basically, it's a way to test more complex models of dark matter, or as here I call it, invisible matter. But before we get into dark matter, we have to make sure we're all on the same page real briefly on regular matter, or matter that makes up everything. So conveniently here we have the periodic table, with which we're all familiar with. But in particle physics, we have our own periodic table, though we don't call it that. We call this a standard model of particle physics, or standard model of elementary particles. The details aren't important, but the idea is that we have classes of particles that make up our everyday world, and we call them quarks and leptons. For instance, a proton is actually made up of 2 up quarks, a down quark, a neutron, 2 down, and 1 up. And then we have our familiar electron there. Details aren't important. The more important question to ask is how do these particles actually interact? And according to the standard model, there's only 3 ways that these particles can interact. One is a strong nuclear force, another is electromagnetism, and the third is the weak nuclear force. And each of these 3 fundamental forces have particles that mediate interactions between these particles. So in order to get a fundamental force, you have to have a fundamental particle. And pay attention to this weak nuclear force, because that does actually play a role in dark matter. Now the question is this everything? Does this give a complete description of all the matter we observe in the universe? And the answer is no. Before we get there, here's another way of describing exactly what I said. This is just a complex web of how these particles are allowed to interact. So for instance, you can take an electron up there in the top left and see that it interacts with a photon because it's electromagnetic. And you can kind of follow what particles interact with what. So as I said, this does not give a complete description of everything in the universe. And that's because when we go to astrophysics, things don't really match up. So I don't think you can see it. It's kind of low resolution. But this is a typical spiral galaxy. And we have this law of gravity that tells how stars are to orbit the galaxy. And when you compute the law of gravity, this is what you get on your left. But when you actually make this measurement, and this is pretty much universal in all galaxies, you actually get this here on the right. And to see the difference, you really have to look on the outer edge. You can see the one on the right is moving much, much faster. In fact, instead of going down as you expect, it's pretty much flat. So that's a big deal, because if gravity's wrong, a lot of other things are wrong. But you can infer other types of matter. So again, this is what standard model matter says should happen, but this is what actually happens, and this picture works if you have some extra invisible matter that you can't detect with your telescopes. And we call this dark matter, which I have represented here as a little ghost, because that's how it kind of behaves. It doesn't interact much with matter. It kind of just floats around, but we see its gravitational effects. So you might be wondering why I just postulated extra matter instead of just changing the law of gravity. I've heard a few people here that are fans of what's called MOND, or modified Newtonian dynamics, which gets this right if you change the law of gravity, but that doesn't account for any of the other evidence we see in it for dark matter. And I'm not going to go into details of this. Essentially, this is a famous picture.
if you type in the bullet cluster in Google, you'll see this. Here you get a different distribution between regular matter and dark matter. And you see the regular matter because these bullet clusters, these large clusters of galaxies are colliding and emitting X-rays, and you see that in red. But you see dark matter through what's called gravitational lensing, and that's how essentially matter can actually bend light through gravity. And you can see, and that's shown in blue, and you can see that these don't agree. And I think the most convincing evidence is actually the one on the right. This is called the cosmic microwave background. It's basically a snapshot of the temperature of the early universe. About 400,000 years after the Big Bang, you get this map. And you can see some hot and cold spots here. And in those hot and cold spots, you can actually see dark matter. It's a bit technical, but it's there. In other evidence, dark matter is tied closely to galactic evolution. Basically, more matter means more clumping, tied to Big Bang nucleus synthesis and supernova data. And as a side note, if somebody asks me how dark matter is tied to biological evolution, mainly the extinction of the dinosaurs, I'd be happy to answer that. It's pretty interesting. Okay, so you kind of combine all these measurements and ask how much of this stuff is in the universe, and you get this famous pie chart, which is shown in every dark matter talk ever. And what you get is the universe is dominated 73% in terms of energy budget by dark energy, which is a completely different topic, and I won't have time to cover it, unfortunately. It's basically responsible for the acceleration of expansion of the universe. So that's a dominant part of the universe. The rest is made up of this dark matter, which is 23%, and normal matter, or standard model matter, which is 4%. So if you look here, our current understanding of the universe is 4%. And the rest of the universe is pretty much dark. And this is called the standard model of cosmology, or the lambda CDM model. Lambda is the symbol for dark energy, and CDM means cold dark matter. So you could either look at this and give up, or be a scientist and look and try and understand what the nature of dark matter is. So let's write down everything we know about dark matter. So first, dark matter is dark. Should be pretty obvious, meaning it doesn't emit or absorb light. Dark matter has mass, hence the term matter, because we see its interaction via gravity. Technically, it doesn't have to have mass to interact via gravity, but we know dark matter clumps. If it's massless, it can't clump that way. Now, less obvious, it's stable. And what I mean by that is it has a lifetime greater than the age of the universe, so about 14 billion years, because we see it in the early universe and we see it today. So it has to be around at least that long. And four is a bit more technical, and I don't have time to go into details, but it satisfies many astrophysical and particle physics constraints. Now, unfortunately, this only gives you a very wide range of what dark matter can be in terms of mass, and it spans 50 orders of magnitude, which is bad. And that's shown up here. These are units of mass in electron volts, and if you're not familiar with that, that's all right. I just marked the proton mass there, so you can refer to that. This lower bound is derived from the fact that it's so low in mass that its wavelength is actually larger than the size of the galaxy, and you'd actually need it to be more localized than that. And then the upper mass is a famous Planck mass, actually. Okay, so how do we narrow this down, which I'll get into? But first, how would we even begin to look for dark matter if it's completely dark? So how do we detect something that's dark? We look at its interactions with regular matter other than gravity. So we see it through gravity, but in order to understand its fundamental nature, we need to look at its interaction with regular matter. So this diagram is really important. This shows DM, which is dark matter. And what this shows, if you follow the arrow, is these dark matter particles collide and annihilate and become SM, which is standard model or regular matter. And it does that through some force, some interaction, or some mediating particle. And it can be one of these. So if you say dark matter does this through electromagnetic process, you just throw a photon in there, and that's what you get.
But as we said, it doesn't interact with the photon. And for technical reasons, it doesn't interact with the strong force, which is, you know, gluon. So what you're really left with is weak force particles, Z bosons and Higgs bosons. Or, as I'll propose, a new particle. So what are some experiments that can exploit these interactions? And I'll give you three examples. One mechanism, as I just described, is to annihilate dark matter. And that's actually done naturally for us in nature. There's a lot of dark matter in the galaxy. So you can have a telescope, such as the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer, put in space, point this at the center of the galaxy, and look for dark matter annihilations by measuring standard model particles that come out of it, such as electrons. Now you can take this diagram and go any direction. So let's go the other way and actually produce dark matter, which is done at several experiments, such as this big machine over in Switzerland called the Large Hadron Collider. It's a 17-mile-long particle accelerator. And what that does is collide protons, which are the standard model particles, very high energy in hopes to actually produce dark matter. And what you do is use a detector here that's called the ATLAS detector. Dark matter actually goes right through your detector and you don't see it. But how do you know it's there? What you do is look for missing momentum, actually, because you have to invoke conservation momentum. That's always true no matter what. So you could say you observe dark matter by not observing it in this case. The last way is by scattering dark matter. So you're probably wondering, is dark matter flowing through me right now? The answer is yes. You have dark matter swirling in the Milky Way galaxy. And you can do what's called a direct detection experiment. And you can take this tank, in this case liquid xenon, bury it deep in the mine shaft to filter out all the cosmic rays that can mock a dark matter signal, and wait for one of these dark matter particles to come and hit your tank and deposit energy, and you can pick up that energy and see dark matter potentially. And so this is an example of experiment I worked on a few years ago called Lux Zeppelin, which will take data in a few years. Okay. So we went over how do we detect something that's dark, but how do we even know dark matter has non-gravitational interactions? Because everything I've told you so far doesn't suggest that it does. And for that, we have to go back to cosmology, particularly to the early universe. So dark matter today, as I said, is part of the cold dark matter model. It's cold. In order for dark matter to be cold today, that means it has to be in thermal equilibrium in the early universe 14 billion years ago. And so what does that mean? So we're talking about a nanosecond after the Big Bang, up to a nanosecond. You have dark matter and regular matter in a very, very tight space. You have some interaction. We don't know the interaction. Where dark matter annihilates the standard model particles, and then the reverse happens. And this is like a chemical equilibrium, but this is particle physics equilibrium, where matter is actually created and destroyed. Now, eventually, the universe expands, and when it expands, it cools. And when it cools, this process is no longer viable because it's not energetic enough. So this process cuts off. And once this process cuts off, dark matter and regular matter don't really interact anymore. And what you get is an abundance of dark matter and some regular matter left over. And the ratio we observe in the universe is 85% dark matter and 15% regular matter or standard model matter. So this is actually really nice because this constrains a lot of models. Because any model of dark matter you have to respect this final result of 85 to 15. Dark matter to standard model ratio. Okay, so let's play around with this a bit and plug in some particles that we know. So say a Z boson or Higgs boson. These are weak nuclear force particles, and let's plug that in and see what we get. And this is really interesting because what you get is, after you do your calculations, you get a dark matter particle that
has a similar mass to a Z or a Higgs boson, and also a similar strength or coupling to these particles. So what that means is that that's a very strong hint to have this a particle with the same mass and same strength, that it is sort of the same, belongs to the same force, essentially. So as I say here, it's strong evidence that dark matter is a new weak sector particle, or a new particle that belongs to the weak force. And this is pretty miraculous. In fact, so miraculous that they call it the WIMP miracle. And I don't have the acronym spelled out here, but WIMPs are weakly interacting massive particles. Now, on the other hand, you have, and I don't want to go into detail on this, I don't have enough time, something called supersymmetry, which is resolves a pure particle physics problem. It's really why the LHC was built. They were going to try and find supersymmetry. And that appeared to point to the exact same object. So it's kind of like two birds with one stone. Two independent motivations pointed to this WIMP-like object. So as I said, WIMPs were motivated by the WIMP miracle and supersymmetry. However, WIMPs and SUSY is short for supersymmetry, have not been detected. And these models are running out of room, and they're running out of room fast. And this plot is a bit technical. This shows sort of the WIMP parameter space. X-axis is mass. Y-axis is how strongly it interacts with matter. And basically, you design experiments to target spaces in this region. And the shaded regions are excluded by past experiments. And the farther you go down on the plot, the better your experiment is. So every few months, this plot gets updated by new experiments, going down further and further and further. So each of these experiments gets better at not finding anything than the previous experiments. So eventually, you're going to hit this bottom part here called the neutrino floor, which you will not be able to distinguish between a particle called a neutrino and dark matter. So that's why I say it's running out of room. Now the question is, are there other places to look beyond this simplistic model? And a natural place to look is to the left, lower mass. So let's go there. Oh, I also have a note that WIMPs are kind of boring. It would be a boring solution to the problem if just 85% of the matter was a simple extension of the weak nuclear force. Then that's boring. Here's where things get more interesting. When you go down to lower mass in this direction, so imagine this plot is extended here, you hit a cosmological bound called the Lee-Weinberg bound. And this is around a proton mass. And that says if dark matter is below this bound, you apply the mechanism of thermal equilibrium in the early universe, you get too much dark matter after you compute this. Unless you have a new fundamental force, or new mediator, a new particle. So if you're below, say, a proton mass, in your dark matter, that automatically implies that there are new fundamental forces. And I mentioned heavy photon search. Dark photon is another term for it. As I'll explain, dark photon is a simple and natural candidate. So let's back up and look at all the major models of dark matter. And this is sort of what the community called dark sectors, the community of dark sectors, agrees that we should look here. WIMPs are up there in that kind of narrow space. That's the most favored model. Next, you might have heard of QCD axions. Those are pretty interesting. But what I work on is something called hidden sector dark matter. All these models that describe dark matter, these are called dark matter candidates, and I like to express it as this. I had a lot of fun making that. All right, so let's... am I doing it on time? Okay. Describe a hidden sector. So imagine we have our standard model sector, our regular matter, in this complex web as I've shown here. Now a hidden sector would be very similar, and have its own web, could be just as complex, more complex, less complex, but be completely decoupled from the standard model. And if it's completely decoupled, we can't detect it, and we don't care. It's not science. You can't empirically detect something. But if we want dark matter to belong to this hidden sector, remember we need an interaction between standard model and dark matter for thermal equilibrium to occur in the early universe, which means we need a missing link between these two webs, at least one. Now, what's really exciting is that the possible realm of missing links is very, very limited for technical reasons. And one such missing link is a dark or heavy photon. So our experiment was one of the first players in the game. We called the heavy photon. Unfortunately, dark photon caught on, but I still have to mention both, contractually obligated to. So what is a dark photon? So a dark photon is almost identical to a regular photon, but it completely belongs to this hidden sector, and a dark photon would actually have a mass. So this photon is massless. A dark photon is much the same, but has a mass, and that would provide the missing link. So this is analogous to electromagnetism, which means photon is responsible for electromagnetism in our familiar world. This would be a form of dark electromagnetism in this hidden sector. All right, so how do we even begin to start searching for this? So we have to, this object, the dark photon. First, we have to produce it. Second, we have to detect it. So first, it's worth understanding how to produce a regular photon. And Kirk gave a fantastic talk yesterday on Bremsstrahlung in medical x-rays. It's the same exact process, except 100,000 times more energetic. And then you can't use a medical device for that. We need a giant particle accelerator, such as this one at Jefferson Lab in Newport News, Virginia. Basically, electron starts there, goes around this racetrack, and then we send it to a tungsten target and smash it, and that produces a photon, and the electron recoils. And we call that Bremsstrahlung. Now, this is, for technical reasons, a different type of photon. It does not survive. It immediately decays into electron and what's called a positron, which is identical to electron, just positive charge. Details aren't important. And we actually detect these pairs to imply the existence of that. Now, a dark photon would be produced in a similar process, except this process would be called dark Bremsstrahlung. And it would be identical to this in that it decays electron-positron pairs. Now, the question is, how do we distinguish between these two? And there's a very distinctive signature of a dark photon. And I made this really cool PowerPoint animation, and I hope it works. So here's Bremsstrahlung, and this is production of a regular photon. Oh, it does work. So electron comes, hits the target, and then produces those. And then it's going faster than I can talk. All right, do you see the difference there? So here the photon decays immediately to these pairs. But in this case, dark photon can actually, it's got a longer lifetime, which means it can travel a distance and then decay to those particles. So that's a distinctive signature between a regular and a dark photon. How much distance does it travel? That depends on the parameters. Details aren't important, just running short on time. Just know that down here, that distance it travels between, say, 100 meters and 1 kilometer. All the way up there, it's basically zero, and you need a different mechanism actually to detect it. And in this region is the 1 millimeter to 1 centimeter region. If you notice, and I'm going to plot all the experiments that have so far excluded everything shaded, that there's a class of experiments here that exclude stuff and a class of experiments up there. But there's a big blank space there, and that's because it is extremely hard to measure that region because the displacement is only a millimeter to a centimeter. So you need a special experiment to do that. And we have that, and that's what I work on, called the V-photon search. If you want to know how to
measure this precisely, you should ask. Okay. So that's a bit of a technical plot. Almost done. Okay. And deeper philosophical question. We have our standard model. We know there's, you know, six quarks, six leptons, three forces, plus a Higgs boson, plus some fundamental constants. Now, interesting question is what lies in a hidden sector? It's completely open, unexplored. Could be dark matter, could be dark forces, as I described. I'm actually working on a model that proposes a dark, strong nuclear force. And once you have those two forces, you can start getting, say, dark atoms and such, which is completely bizarre to think about. So I'll conclude. We have compelling evidence for dark matter, but we don't know what it is. Hidden sectors and dark photons might be one such explanation, and might reveal that our universe is much stranger than we think. All right, thank you.
So we've got time for a few questions. One in the back here.
Oh,
excellent question. I'm glad you asked. So there's the so-called mass extinctions that happen every 60 million years or so. That also corresponds to when the solar system oscillates kind of up and down through the dark or through the Milky Way plane. And there could be, doesn't have to be, much denser region of dark matter there. And that density in dark matter can actually deflect asteroids and increase asteroid activity there. And it also could increase volcanic activity because Earth can capture the extra dark matter, and dark matter can kind of orbit inside the Earth and then slowly start interacting and heat up everything and increase geological activity. That's very speculative, but people have proposed that.
Yeah. Okay.
When will we be able to buy dark matter on Amazon Prime?
Oh, good question. Probably not in our lifetime.
About 60 million
years
from now.
60 million. Right.
The dark photon then has mass. So is there a similar way you can get a symmetry breaking thing where you could get a dark weak force?
Yes. So back to the twin sector. There's a twin sector that does have a dark weak force,
okay.
Dark strong force, and a dark Higgs as well.
Okay.
So dark Higgs boson.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you mentioned our bodies are being bombarded by dark matter. How large is that flux thought to be? Compared to like a neutrino flux?
Yeah, much smaller.
Because
dark matter, well, it depends on the dark matter mass, actually. So in the WIMP region, much, much smaller. I think the dark matter density is like two particles in a 2-liter bottle, which is very small. Whereas but if dark matter is around the mass of neutrinos, it could be, you know, comparable.
Okay, more questions? Yes.
I came in a little late, so I apologize if you answered this at the beginning. But why does detecting dark matter matter? What practical application would this have?
So if I go back,
that's how you get your thesis.
Thesis first, yes. Explain this. We don't understand 96% of the universe, and we want to. So. Fundamental understanding of what the nature of dark matter is. Yeah.
Okay. Or? One more question?
Yeah. So you showed a picture of the galaxy and how there's something about the gravity that's not, you know, because of dark matter, it influences the way the curve is different from what
right.
you expect. So if you observe that in our galaxy, where would we observe something similar happening in our world?
So you can make these measurements in the Milky Way galaxy as well. Is that what you mean?
I mean, like, you know, all the gravity works on
Earth. Right. Oh, yeah. It's such a weak effect that you can't detect that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah.